It's draft day. Ravens talk all day long. 105.7 The Fan.
I think Rashad Bateman is going to take a big step just off the top of my head. You know, I think Rashad's going to get opportunities this year. He ran routes really well. He worked super hard. He was healthy for the first time. Even as the year went on, he got healthier. And you could see it in his play.
John Harbaugh, Ravens head coach. That was a few weeks back talking about Rashad Bateman. About to have a big monster season off the top of his head. Now we hope that it goes on to the field in 2024. It's certainly going to happen here in Baltimore. As yesterday it was announced, as we were getting off the air, basically, Vinny, that Rashad Bateman had reached a three-year contract extension with the Ravens because he was up against it in regards to the fifth-year option being picked up. So that's a moot point right now. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Bob Haney, Vinny Serrato, and joining us now in studio from the Baltimore Banner. He's no longer on hotlines. He's actually in person. He's Jonas Schaefer. First of all, Jonas, good morning.
Morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for coming in. Bateman news on the stun level for you was what yesterday?
I'd say like an 8 out of 10, just because there was a lot of speculation about whether this guy would get moved. There was a lot of agita over Rashad Bateman taking down the Ravens presences from his social media. And then there's just the fact that, you know, as a GM, you have some advantages if you keep your cards hidden, if you keep them up your sleeve. And for the Ravens to say, actually, we are signing this guy to our wide receiver core for the long term, we think, you know, there's always the possibility, I suppose, that this is just step one of a two-step process. But it was surprising. You know, I think it's good business if just to get a guy besides Zay Flowers signed beyond this year. But for the Ravens to get this done before the draft and have that piece in place is a little bit surprising.
Now, Jonas, the thing that, like, I was always kind of shocked, like, I mean, Harb's, like, right after the season, he came out so strong and aggressive on Bateman.
My question.
You know, and that was what, like, and it was almost like he was sending a message to everybody that, hey, I believe in this guy, and then Eric kind of backed it up too. So that was what was kind of surprising to me. And I talk about like the film study that you did, because you're the one that started talking about that and kind of alerted everybody about, you know, his separation and stuff.
Yeah, well, I think to your point about John Harbaugh coming out kind of forcefully, that was in response to a question that I asked, and maybe it wasn't so much him taking umbrage about Bateman, but it was also maybe him taking umbrage at the insinuation that Lamar was not on the same page with them, because, you know, it takes two to tango, and those guys had not been connecting. They were okay that rookie year, even though Rashad, I think, probably did better work in general with Tyler Huntley. He had a lot of time with Tyler Huntley because Lamar was sidelined with that ankle injury. But I think the most interesting thing from the film study was, yes, Rashad was getting open, but no, he was not really anywhere close to being the first or second read in these progressions. You know, I think there's a site called Fantasy Points that does a lot of good analytical data. And one of their metrics is something called first or second read percentage. And in terms of like the receivers who were being targeted over the course of the year, it was Zay number one, like Mark Andrews number two, OBJ number three, and then four and five, pretty close to another. four or five, pretty close to one another, were Rashad Bateman and Nelson Aguilar. So that was pretty telling to me that even though on film, again, I'm just an amateur, I don't have your eye for talent, but he was getting separation, but there was nothing that he was doing in the eyes of Monken or Lamar or whoever it was calling the shots to say, we're going to reward you with these looks in the offense.
Well, the one that was most telling to me, and Bob and I have talked about it a bunch, the Kansas City game. He's running the double move on the outside. And if you're running a double move, you're the number one. You are the target. And he was, and if you're even, you're leaving. You know, so I mean, if you're even, you're throwing it. And Lamar looks at him and then comes off late and throws the interception to Likely. I'm like, the hell?
In triple coverage, no less.
Yeah. So I mean, if you're Bateman, you're like, what the F?
I know. And I think if I were a Ravens wide receiver, my frustration would be I got to be the big, you know, if I'm the big physical guy running vertical routes, I want to get those 50-50 balls. And Lamar, throughout his career, he knows his strengths, he knows his weaknesses, and that means that he's not going to throw some of these jump balls. You know, I did a story on the draft class for wide receivers a week or two ago, and Lamar Jackson, over his career as a starter, has completed one back shoulder fade in his entire career. That really? Was that was to Nelson Aguilar in that game in Pittsburgh. You know, the kind of the slot fade in the second quarter. He hasn't attempted a whole lot, but you think of like the guys who would be that classic X receiver. It's fun to imagine, you know, an Adonai Mitchell in Baltimore being that guy who can stretch the field, turn those 50-50 balls into 80-20 balls. But Lamar's also got to get to a point where if a guy has a step or a half step, he's got to have that confidence to throw it to his back shoulder and say, I trust you to go and high point that thing and, you know, get us 20, 30 yards.
It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Jonas Schaefer, Baltimore Banner, joining us on draft day. 8 o'clock, first round starts live from Detroit Ravens with the 30th pick. So now that Bateman has signed his extension, we'll cross wide receiver probably off the list at 30. But as we get closer and closer to it, we know the areas of need, what your intel say about what Baltimore might do at 30. I mean, will they stay there? Any buzz about that possible move?
I think everyone's phone is ringing right now. I mean, just everyone's looking to move up. Everyone's looking to move down. I think there was a report from Peter Schrager that things get really crazy at like that 10 to 15 range where just everyone is looking to move up or down a couple spots. As for just what could happen at 30, I think historically the Ravens are far more likely to trade back than they are to trade up. What's interesting to me is that when they have traded up, it's been for these kind of big swings, like these athletic dudes, 1% athletes who they think, you know, is worth giving up a third round pick or a second round pick for. You think of, Michael Orr. That was a guy that they traded up for. They traded up for Lamar Jackson, obviously. They traded up for Haloti Ngata. So is there someone who kind of fits that prototype who might be available at 23, 25, 26, who they are say, you know, we feel really good about him. So good, in fact, that we're willing to give up, you know, pick 90 or 93 or whatever it is because we trust in this guy's ability to be a difference maker. Maybe that's an Amarius Mims. Maybe that's, you know, probably not
Guyton.
I think Guyton's not like the 1% athlete that Mims would be, you know, but I do think there are certain guys in this draft who, if they fall to a certain spot, maybe it's even like a Graham Barton, who's a great athlete, even though the value of him being a guard could be a little bit less than desire. So I think ultimately they'll probably stick at 30 and get someone that, you know, we all praise them for, you know, the classic media response of, oh, the Ravens, how do they keep getting away with it? I just think that with probably a couple, you know, five or six quarterbacks going in this first round, I think that's really going to work to the Ravens' favor.
We did decide, though, that if they take a receiver, they're not getting an A in the first round.
Yeah, right. No matter who's great.
Right.
It doesn't matter. Right.
Now, Jonas, the thing is, like, today what Eric will be doing is – because you can't cut any. What you're doing is you're calling other GMs right now and just say, if your guy's not there, would you be willing to move back? And then you're talking to people behind you, too, that, hey, if our guy's not there, you know, if you have a guy, you know, give us a call. So all that stuff, like all Eric's just doing prep work right now for his trades. And then all his stuff is going to come down two picks before, you know, like 10, 15, 20 minutes prior to if he's going to try to move up or if he's trying to get back, you know. So it'll be busy at that time, but they're going to be more likely sweating it out just following the tackle board. How many do you think, you know, who would you not take? Would you take the BYU kid?
At 30, probably not. I think he does fit Kingsley Sumatia, does fit the Ravens board in a lot of interesting ways. You know, I did a study that went up this morning on the Baltimore Banner on just what are the kind of things that go into a guy's makeup that the Ravens prioritize more than just the film. Mm-hmm. It's youth, and Kingsley Suamatia is 21. It's, you know, Power 5 background. I know he's from BYU, but he started that career at Oregon.
Right.
A former top recruit, big for his position. There's a lot of things that makes sense for that connection to the Ravens and Kingsley Suamatia. I just think that he's nowhere close to being ready to play week one. So I think it probably, for me, of that tier of offensive linemen, again, amateur ball watcher here, it would go Guyton, Morgan, you know, even though maybe he's a guard at that next level, and then Kingsley.